The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Sir Keir Starmer was in the hot seat this morning as Andrew Marr embarks on a series of interviews with the major party leaders. The interview comes shortly after it was announced that the UK's official COVID death toll has passed 80,000, and with the Office for National Statistics reporting that as many as 1 in 50 people have had the virus over the last week of 2020. Marr asked Starmer if the restrictions were tough enough to slow the spread of the virus.
Well, they are tough and they're necessary.
Enough.
They may not be tough enough, but in a sense, I think the most important thing is for people to get that message about stay at home. And it's up to the government to put that message out there the whole time. We've had mixed messages, I'm afraid, for the last 9 months, which is why we've got a problem. I would like to see the Prime Minister out there every day with the press conference, making sure that that message is absolutely getting through, because that's the most crucial thing.
We've seen, in terms of compliance, we've seen this extraordinary scene from Derbyshire where two women with cups of tea were collared by the police and got into serious trouble. Is that the kind of thing that you think is going to have to happen around the country?
Well, like, I don't think that was a particularly good example, and there will always be examples of that. The police, by and large, have done a really good job in very difficult circumstances.
But aren't we going to have to fight? Well, aren't the police going to have to fine people rather than warn them now?
I think there's a move.
Given the severity of what's going on in the country.
I think there's a move today from the police to say, look, we'll give one warning, then we'll move to a fine. And I don't quarrel with that. That may be a good thing. But the most important thing, actually, because the vast majority of the British public have complied with the rules. They've done that for 9 months. But they need clarity about exactly what is asked of them, because we've had all this mixed messaging, you know,
okay.
Stay at home, don't stay at home, eat out, don't eat out, go back to work, don't go back to work. All right. Of that has led us to where we are. We need, if we can, to summons the spirit of last March when more people were actually staying at home.
The government has been criticised for consistently maintaining that schools were to reopen after the Christmas break. The Tier 5 restrictions mean that schools are now open only for the children of key workers or for those in vulnerable positions. Marr put it to Starmer that he didn't have much more credibility on this issue than the Prime Minister.
When did you decide that all the schools had to be closed?
Well, on Sunday, I said that a lockdown was needed and called for that. We saw the SAGE minutes, the medical advice, just before the new year. And it seemed obvious to me that that's where it's heading. I thought the closure of schools was inevitable. I didn't want to close schools, I'll be honest about that, because I think closing schools should be the last resort, and it has a huge impact, particularly on vulnerable children and children who don't have access to devices, etc.
In terms of clear messaging, if you thought it was inevitable, should you not have said it earlier? Because on the Sunday, you said specifically that you didn't want to call for schools to close. You did not give a different message from the Prime Minister during that period.
Well, I didn't want schools to close. I'm not going to shy away from that. I did say on Sunday I thought it was inevitable and we needed a plan for it. But I didn't want schools to close. Just before Christmas, I said to the Prime Minister, this five-day mixing is going to cause real problems. And he said to me, you're trying to cancel Christmas. Why don't you just get honest? And then a number of days later, he did it.
So the general
criticism that the Prime Minister's been slow and incompetent is there. And,
well, that's,
and
that's why... That's right. I'm just looking at this particular decision.
Yes.
On this particular decision, you are just as slow and just as indecisive as the Prime Minister. And I wonder whether this is the moment to apologise to the trade unions involved, for instance, who were saying much earlier that schools were going to have to close.
Well, look, I didn't want schools to close. I didn't think it was right for retail to be open in certain parts of the country and schools to be closing. It became inevitable. And that's part of the national restrictions. But look, to the trade unions, to teachers, to staff who worked hard over Christmas to try and get schools back up and running, I think we all owe them an apology and we all owe them, recognition of what they have done, because they've worked hard now for 9 months in really difficult circumstances, either in schools with key workers, then when they reopened, and trying to do teaching online. This is a real struggle, and we should all recognise that.
While discussing the government's Brexit deal, Marr challenged Starmer over a pledge he had given in the Labour leadership election that as Prime Minister he would bring back free movement for EU citizens.
Huge numbers of people in the Labour leadership election and in the country voted for you on the basis that you would do that because you told them you would do that. The Daily Mirror asked you in specific terms, if you become Labour Prime Minister, will you bring back freedom of movement of EU citizens to the UK? And your answer was yes, look, of course.
Andrew, what I'm saying is this. We've had, 4 years of negotiations with the EU. The last thing anybody wants, including the EU, is to start again from scratch with this treaty. We have got to, for better or for worse, thin treaty though it is, we will inherit that treaty when we come into government in 2024.
So you won't reintroduce free movement. You said that back in January last year, so not that long ago. And also it was the sixth of your 10 pledges that you were going to bring back free movement. And now you're saying, no, I won't.
Well, Andrew, what I'm saying is we've negotiated a treaty, or the Prime Minister's negotiated a treaty. That now is the basis of our relationship with the EU. We didn't know what that was until we saw it just before Christmas. We now know what it is. It's thin. It's not what was promised. But whether we like it or not, that is going to be the treaty that an incoming Labour government inherits and has to make work. And
I think quite
and
a lot
it
of
is
Labour...
not, it is not being straight with the British public to say we can come into office in 2024 and operate some other treaty. We have to make that treaty
but
work.
It's quite a moment to drop a pledge as big as that and say that a future Labour government will not reopen free movement of people. A lot of Labour Party supporters who may have rejoined the European movement and who desperately hope the fight, the struggle to rejoin the EU starts here and starts with you. We'll be very, very disappointed to hear
you. I don't
you.
Think there's a case for rejoining the EU. I've said that before. I think I've said it on your programme. But I think pretending to the British public that somehow, after 4 years of negotiation, the treaty that's just been secured is going to be up for grabs and that the EU are going to start saying, let's start all over again. That is not realistic.
Marr also interviewed the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, who had some positive updates to make on the rollout of the vaccines.
How many people have been vaccinated so far?
Well, we're going to publish the daily data from tomorrow. The good news is that over the last week, we've vaccinated more people than in the entirety of December. So we're accelerating the rollout. It's increasing.
How many? Can you give me a figure?
Well, it's around the 2 million mark, but we're going to publish the exact figures tomorrow and then henceforth on a daily basis. The good news is that we're getting to over 200,000 people a day is significant progress. And amongst those who we need to reach most, amongst the over 80s, we've now vaccinated around a third of all of the over 80s. So very, very good progress.
The inventor of the Pfizer vaccine said you had to vaccinate everybody by the autumn. Are you going to be able to do that?
Yes. So we're absolutely going
Everybody will be vaccinated by the autumn.
Every adult will be offered a vaccine by the autumn. Absolutely.
Sophie Ridge also interviewed Hancock and asked him for his opinion on the case of Jessica Allen and Eliza Moore, who were fined £200 by the police for driving 5 miles to go for a walk at a Derbyshire reservoir. The cases have since been placed under review.
Were the police right to fine them, and could we see more fines like this in the future?
Well, I think the police have been doing an absolutely brilliant job. Very difficult circumstances.
But specifically on that case?
Well, I'm going to back the police. Because the challenge here is that every flex can be fatal. You know, you might look at the rules and think, well, it doesn't matter too much if I just do this or do that. But these rules are not there as boundaries to be pushed. They're the limit of what people should be doing.
So if you
drive,
I just want to just clarify, if you drive somewhere for a walk, you can expect to be fined by the police?
Well, obviously, I don't know the specific circumstances, and I support the police in doing their very difficult job, which they're doing very sensitively, but they're also right to take very seriously the rules we've brought in. You know, we haven't brought them in because we wanted to. We've brought them in because we've had to. And every flexibility can be fatal. Because if you just say, oh, I'll just flex this bit of the rules, the problem is this virus is so contagious, it then passes on. And then, as we've seen, it is deadly. And there are people dying every day, and the NHS has got this enormous pressure on it like it's never seen before.
Ridge later spoke to Tracy Nichols, the chief executive of the College of Paramedics, who explained the situation facing the NHS in certain parts of the country.
Sophie, we're very used to seeing ambulance services take some strain over the winter months due to the normal pressures that you'd see any particular year. But this year particularly has seen incredible pressure because of the clinical presentation of the patients that our members are seeing. They are sicker, and we are seeing this incredible bottleneck despite the Herculean efforts of both our paramedics and ambulance staff and the emergency department teams. We're seeing the ambulance handover delays at a scale we haven't seen before.
We've all seen, of course, those images of ambulances backed up outside hospitals waiting to get the patients inside. How long are ambulances having to wait outside hospitals, and is that putting patient safety at risk?
So I think it's different across the country, and we've seen certainly in London and the South East an increased level of pressure recently. Our members have reported to us that they can wait as little as half an hour, but we've had some members who've waited 5, 6, 7, 8 and even 9 hours.
9 hours?
9 hours. And that's with a patient for their experience. We know that patient experience, if that's poor, that can affect clinical outcomes. But I would say, Sophie, the hidden risk is that your viewers can see the ambulances at the hospitals. That doesn't take into account the huge number of patients that are waiting for an ambulance that can't get to them. So the control room staff, who are also doing a fantastic job, are holding those calls until they can get a response.
And finally, Peter Horby, the chair of the Nerve Tag Committee, which advises the government on the virus, told Marr that the pandemic response might have to keep on evolving to make sure that COVID can be kept under control in years to come.
There's a big spectrum of viruses. You can go from flu, where we need to update the vaccine almost every year, through to something like measles, where we hardly ever have to change the vaccine. You know, it's a very stable virus. This virus, coronavirus, is somewhere in the middle. So if we do have to update the vaccine, I doubt it would be every year, but it may be every few years that it has to be updated. And we don't yet know how long immunity lasts, and so how frequently we'd have to revaccinate people.
But the notion that COVID will be sort of banished from the Earth's surface in due course is wrong, is it? This is going to be something that survives around human populations for a very, very long time to come.
Yes. The one virus we've managed to get rid of, the smallpox virus, had a very different characteristics to this virus. This one, I think, will not go away. We're going to have to live with it.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.